Welcome to Ready, Set, Real Estate, where we will help empower and educate you on many different aspects of real estate, finance, and investing. Each week, we will expand your knowledge and uncover hidden truths. We will break down real-world scenarios and study actual how-to strategies. Anyone can buy real estate, but together we'll ensure you make smart real estate investment decisions. Now, here's your host, award-winning author, international speaker, and real estate educator, Lisa Gillette.
Is that time? Happy, happy Wednesday, wherever you are on this still phenomenal planet. I am your host, Lisa Gillette, also known as Super Agent. I am happy about today's show because not only do I have a special guest, we love when we have guests on the show so that you don't hear me talk all the time. You get to hear from someone else and their knowledge, their experience. And, you know, when I do bring someone to the table here to this real estate conversation, you know, I've vetted my folks to bring value. Because that's what we do here at Ready, Set, Real Estate is we bring value to our real estate community. If you haven't already, make sure you let me know whether you're in the chat box, you're live, press one, let me know you're here, press two, let me know you shared it. You know the price of admission here for the show is that you participate. So price of admission is letting us know that you're here, press that one, and press two lets me know you shared it. If you are catching us on the replay, make sure you hashtag replay. That way, when you do that, what happens is I get a message and I can come back on and I still engage with you post the show. Also, I want to say shout out to those of you who have been tuning in on our radio podcast. You have been doing phenomenal. Really, in our genre, meaning in our category, we broke records last year in terms of the amount of podcasts that we produced. And shout out to those who are listening in Kenya, in Germany. I think I had UK, Brazil. So just that's what I enjoy about the internet, this thing called Wi-Fi, right? Wi-Fi has made it that much greater for us to connect. And there's no secret. So there's no excuse that you can't say you didn't know. Because if someone shared this channel with you, they want you to know something about real estate. All right, so I have a special guest. Before I do that, I want to get into goals. Let's just talk about goals. I want to do the announcement for next week. Oh my goodness. Next week we do have, I've got to bring it up. So next week we actually have an event coming up. And I want to talk about that real quick. So I'm going to share my screen. Of course, I do want you to visit. That was sneak peek of our guest. He's ready. So check out realestatelife.events. Realestatelife.events. That's where all our events registration page is held. Register for next week's event, Saturday, June 24th, 10 a.m. Hosted at one of our valued real estate partners, Southwest Escrow Corporation. They have a community room that I've been proudly sharing because I had the great opportunity to build out the community rooms at Southwest Escrow, not just for our community, but for our real estate industry professionals as well. With that, I also want to remind you, we are going to begin the agent training. I will have an agent training happening in July. More on that later. What's more importantly, we're going to talk about how to undo a reverse mortgage. And I know Tim's going to be like, oh, I can help you with that. How to undo a reverse mortgage, avoid foreclosure upon death of a senior borrower, because this is something we're seeing a lot more. I know today Tim is definitely going to touch on it a little bit, but I will bring him back because he is certified in reverse mortgages. So you talk about someone who's certified, experienced, trained, got tons of knowledge about reverse mortgages. Mr. Timothy Campbell is our guest today, who also has that knowledge bank to share with us. So I do want to bring him back on the show. Today, we'll be focusing on ADUs. But for the sake of the event happening next Saturday, make sure you register. I will send out the blast for those of you who are on the email list. I know you registered for last month and we had to reschedule because nephew had a birthday party on the same day and I just couldn't do both. So, you know, family time is important. And so I just wanted to make sure that we still held that event, because a lot of you expressed interest in that topic. So I want to make sure that we share that. So here's the link. I've dropped it in the comments, realestatelife.events. If you're about that real estate life, check us out at realestatelife.events. And this is this month's workshop. It is free to attend. If you're an industry professional, there is a fee. You're welcome to come learn with us, but there is a fee as an industry professional, unless you're an agent of our brokerage, of course. So realestatelife.events, I've said it, realestatelife.events. We'll see you next week, okay? Of course, shout out those of you who are tuning in from our partner pages, ERG Enterprises. Lisa Gillette is a Facebook Watch channel. So is Ready, Set, Real Estate. We've got our YouTube channel at LA Super Agent on YouTube. And shout out to those of you who are tuning in from Black Events, Los Angeles. Thank you, thank you, thank you all for sharing. Sharing is caring. All right, so that's that announcement. I've got that one out the way. And then what else is happening? Great things. Oh my goodness, hold up. Hold up. I've got an announcement to make. I've got more announcements, and this one is going to be near and dear for sure. This one is near. I'm getting it ready. So I am getting it ready. This one is a near and dear. So let's get this one, and then we'll be back after our sponsor break. But I want to say, I would like to invite you all to join me. Join me in congratulating our newest team member, Kyle DeBlanc Gillette, who's our newest real estate advisor, joined Divenio Estates. That's our brokerage here in Southern California. He's our newest licensee, and it's near and dear because he's also my husband. So I am very proud to share him with you all, because if you haven't met him yet, you know he is very client service. He wants everyone to win. He goes above and beyond. It's not just me. A lot of my clients and friends, and those of you who've had an opportunity to meet Kyle, know that he gives his all. And so I don't expect anything less from him. Anything less would be uncivilized. And he is here to bring it and bring his wealth of knowledge, both in construction, with a construction background, rehab project management, and he also is a certified home inspector. So he's got a lot to bring to our real estate industry. And I must say, congratulations, Kyle. Hats off to you. I am very proud of you and your commitment to seeing this through. All right. That's my spiel. Okay, cool. I'm excited. Let's be back after. I'll come right back after this sponsor break with our guest, Timothy Campbell. Perfect. That is Real Estate 100, the Teen and Millennial Investment Blueprint, authored by yours truly, Anthony Lee, and co-authored by myself. And if you haven't had this book, if you don't have this book in your library catalog, you are missing out. Okay. So this is an award-winning book Anthony and I put together called Real Estate 100, the Teen and Millennial Investment Blueprint. And one thing that I can appreciate about putting this book together is that it really exposes those who are talking about the game of house hacking. And I'll definitely pick Tim's brain about this, because people want to invest in real estate. They want to house hack, but the math sometimes don't add up. And sometimes you have to walk away from a deal. And Tim doesn't know this, but he's taught me a few things in terms of walking away and thinking it through. And so I'm going to flip through this page, especially because if you leave it to your social media gurus, your Instagram gurus, they say, oh, buy a house for, you know, $200,000 and the mortgage is, you know, $1,600 and you, you know, charge rent of, you know, 2000 and the rest is profit. Not necessarily true, right? Because there's a schedule of expenses, right? And we've got this in the book this way. Schedule of expenses you've got to factor in, not just the mortgage, not just the mortgage. So we talk about that in the book. And for those of you who have read it, have shared, you know, at least I now know that I probably don't want to be a landlord, or I probably don't want to invest. And it's just making sure that you have all the information. It's better that you know than get in over your head. All right. Well, without further ado, I welcome my guest. I'm going to do this first. So Tim, I'm going to bring you on shortly. So I'm going to do it this way. I've got to move my screens around. So drum roll, right? So boom. All right. And I want to share my screen because I got to do it this way. So my guest, Timothy Campbell, Tim and I have been able to work over these years and do deals together. We met actually while I was in my farm. So some of you have heard me use that farm, geographic farming. And I came across Tim. He was in the field. He was working on one of his projects, and I was working on trying to get a listing, just looking at some deferred maintenance or deferred properties in the area and seeing if we can offer a solution, because that's what we do in real estate. I definitely have said we don't steal properties from our neighbors or community people. We're not robbing equity. We want everyone to make everyone to win. And so that's what we look forward to, is doing real estate with ethics and moral. And Tim is one of the very few real estate investors that I still work with for that reason. And so real estate has been in his career for over 30 years and counting. He grew up in Southern California, particularly the LA area, and have helped hundreds of families realize the American dream. He's created literally millions of dollars, millions of dollars in wealth for families and entrepreneurs, not just in real estate, but as a licensed contractor, a loan officer, and as a real estate investor. He's rehabbed and built hundreds of homes and has proven his ability and experience from building single family homes to multi-unit buildings. So not just the SFRs, but also the MFRs, right? So we love to use real estate terms and concepts here. So SFRs, those single family residents to multi-family residents in Southern California. He has also been a licensed contractor for over 30 years. And he is, as I mentioned earlier, C2 reverse mortgage certified for 5 years and an owner of real estate in Southern California for 38 years. Tim says that owning real estate is the single best investment you could make for you and your future generations. He says that it is documented that children of parents who own real estate do better in school and are more likely to graduate from college. Not only does he bring a wealth of experience to your real estate transaction, but a broader perspective as well. Without further ado, I welcome Tim Campbell, Mr. Timothy Campbell, to the show. Tim, how are you? Let me get you back. Let me get you back, Tim. Hold up. I got too many windows open. Let's bring Tim back. Okay, Tim. The suspense is building. Oh my goodness. Where is my window? It's incredible. Should be here. Is it here? Okay, there you are.
Can you hear me now?
Welcome back, Tim. There you go.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Boy, All right. That introduction makes me sound so much better than I feel. Wow, I really appreciate those kind words. And it's true. I was impressed with Lisa. I was out working on a job and I actually saw her knocking on doors. And I was like, how rare is that? I mean, most people rely on the internet and they want to advertise I won't say the coward's way, but they don't want to get out and knock on doors and get face to face with people. And I knew when I saw her out knocking on doors, I was like, wow, I really need to get to know her. And talking about bringing value, we have done deals together. We really have. And you brought a lot of value to me. Being on this show is one of them. I want to thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. In fact, welcome back. Did you get the link last night?
Thanks so much. I did.
You were here 5 years ago. So
yeah.
For those of you, I wouldn't.
And I'll make it back more often if you'll have me.
Absolutely. Because we were talking about reverse mortgages and seeing that that is such a prevalent, it's a popular product that gets pushed in our communities that has, I think, misconceptions wrapped around it. And so mm-hmm. I feel like to be able to open up and have this conversation, because I think what we need to is allow people to make the decisions that they need that best suit them without judgment from family and friends. And mm-hmm. I think that judgment comes from just not having the information, which is why we're having that workshop next week to talk about how to undo it, right? And undo it is mainly an approach for preserving the property for the family, because oftentimes those who take out the reverse mortgages have signed off that it's the bank's house already and I'm just living in it.
That's not true. Right.
It's a grave misconception that I would like to work, and with your help, I'd like to work to undo that misconception, because every senior that I've spoken with a reverse mortgage, and those who've heard, right, the friends of the seniors said, oh, I don't want to do that because they gave their house to the bank. And that's not true. And so
that's not true. Yeah.
I'm doing my part, Tim, and I know you are. So
right. Well, a lot of that misconception came from the early days of reverse mortgages. Reverse mortgages go back the first HECM, home equity mortgage conversion, is what HECM stands for. And a HECM is a type of reverse mortgage that it's an FHA loan, so it does have mortgage insurance, but there are lots of stops in place now to help borrowers to not use all their equity at one time and ultimately lose the property. One of them is they only allow you to get a portion of your proceeds if you are, you know, depending on what the proceeds are at closing. You can't get them all at one time. There was a time when you could take it all, and you know, there unfortunately were family members and others that came along and took advantage of.
So they don't do single payments now?
They do.
You're just saying all of the equity.
You can't get it all. You cannot get it all at one time. There's a certain percentage of it that
Got
you
it.
Can get.
Yeah. Got it. We'll hold that thought in that conversation for another show today.
Okay, and I don't want to just show up and throw up. I mean, you ask the questions and I'll answer them as best I can.
Right. No. Today we want to focus on ADUs because it's still a hot topic. It's still a very much hot topic.
That's a wealth builder as well. That's what one of the things I like so much about ADUs.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And so we are in episode 212. So that means that we've got over 200 episodes on real estate content.
Okay.
And you are adding to our knowledge bank here. So on ADUs, let's just kind of slow it down a bit for those who are new, especially because we have an audience that crosses the California state line. And so they may not be familiar with that term, but they have family that may be here. And this is why I can appreciate that we're so expansive in our reach, is because Tim, I just got an email from an attorney for a family that's in Atlanta that we're going to be probating a property here. Mm. And so
congratulations.
Thank you. And see, that's why it's important for them to understand like the value and the potential of things like ADUs and what does that mean and how that translates to, you know, an increase in value of land, or maybe an opportunity if they decide to retain the property, right? There's just different avenues. So talk to us, what is an ADU?
An ADU is actually an accessory dwelling unit. That's what ADU stands for. They used to be called granny flats. They've been called splits, mother-in-law units. And for a long time, they were illegal. I can remember back in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, I rehabbed a property that had one. And they being the building inspector, made me tear out everything on the inside of this unit and pour cement down the drain so it couldn't be used again. And then, because they were illegal. It wasn't permitted, and you could not get permits to do it once upon a time. Today, you know, it's all the rage.
It is all the rage. And you've reminded me, I think you and I were having this conversation the other day. I needed to, because of that, you hit it on the head, because they were once upon a time illegal, I need to revisit a conversation with a client about their ADU that the city was telling them to do that. This was prior to this entire movement of, I think my last notes, if I'm not mistaken, and I think you and I had shared this with one of the listings, one of the properties you had, homeowners or property owners have until 2025 to be get their ADU compliant before they start to issue, I guess, fines. Do you recall that they've put that into? I recall it was a 5-year window, and I think that window was effective 2020 to 2025 is when property owners have to comply with that. Did you hear that or read the same?
You know, I heard talk of it. There was certainly talk of it before COVID, and then once COVID happened, I kind of started concentrating on what's going on with rent control laws as a property owner. Is that interesting? But I did hear that City of Los Angeles, and we should clarify that, because the City of Los Angeles is a different animal from many other cities throughout the country. I mean, we do things different, but I heard that they were going to restrict non-owner occupants from doing accessory dwelling units. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen, because there's a shortage of housing, and that kind of seems would counteract creating housing by having ADUs, but that's what I heard. Then there's Senate Bill SB 9 and 10, which passed in California, that says that you can divide a lot of 5,000 square feet into four plots. And you can build on each one of them. I don't know if you can sell them separately, those kinds of things. You can.
Okay. You can sell them separately. And in fact, it's affected us industry-wide, because the purchase agreement now has been updated for that purpose, is that it has a blurb on page one of the contract part, not all the disclosure part. But if you recall, there's a line that says the address may not be the same as the property. And I think it's because of the partitioning, the parcel, right, that property. So it's interesting, because our contracts already reflect that. And there is blurb regarding ADU. And I don't know if you know this, but there's like a new certified ADU inspector designation that is available to inspect ADUs. I mean, it's impacted our business so much that we're constantly learning about this. And for me, one of the questions that has come up.
And real estate is a practice.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. No, finish that.
I was just going to say, real estate is a practice, to your point that you just made. It's like, lawyers have a practice, doctors have a practice. We have to be constantly learning, because things are changing so much in our business and right around us. As homeowners, if you want to, you don't have to, what does it take to be an expert homeowner? I there's not a certification for that, but we need to know what's going on around us and how it affects us.
Absolutely.
SB 9 and 10 passed, or was it earlier this year? Was it this year, SB 9 and 10, Senate Bill 9 and 10 passed?
It went into effect, yes, because it changed the dynamic for how my investors, in fact, I've seen developers, and same with you, right? It's like, the rules now, I get a laundry list for investors, developers looking to purchase a property. And one of those, as one of these bills has affected their ability to build on that, is whether they're tenants or owner occupants and how long have they been there. And they've had to have been residing there. I think the owner had to reside there for at least, 5 years?
I'm not sure. I don't want to quote you on that. I mean, this stuff is so new. I'm not sure. In fact, I've never run across a property.
You're like, Lisa, I just rely. Because those are the things that I'm looking out for when I write up the contract terms. And it's just learning. Tim, when you see sometimes we have this conversation, I say, hey, sure. I'm going to need to pull IDs and proof of address. And these are things so that you don't run into a hiccup with the city when you decide to tear it down or build it up. And they want to make sure that you didn't put a tenant out. And right. So we now have to do all this extra documentation during the real estate transaction, which is and can really turn somebody off, especially if an owner is being asked to, you know, produce proof of residence from the last 5 years, right? And a copy of their driver's license. I've seen it. I've closed the deals where those were the terms. And it's so that the builder is protected from when they get in to that process of tearing it down and building it up, that the city doesn't come after them for that, that, hey, you vacated a tenant and you've, you know, now there's consequences. So ADUs, would you say are the equivalent of granny flats, mother-in-law suites?
It's another dwelling unit. It's not considered a second unit. In fact, lenders still consider a single family dwelling and not two units.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Really?
And there are two types of ADUs. There's a separate ADU and then there's a junior ADU. And then a junior ADU can be attached to the main dwelling. So if you wanted to do, let's say you could do a 500 square foot room addition to the main dwelling, you could have, that could be a flat itself with a bathroom, a kitchen, and a living area. And that's perfectly legal. There was a time when that was kind of poo-pooed by the building inspection department. If they suspected that you were going to have a separate entrance with a unit with its own bedroom, bathroom, and so forth, you had to hide that. You had to have the plumbing behind the wall. And then after it passed its inspection, you could add the cabinets and so forth. Today, it's perfectly acceptable. The junior ADU.
Wow. So this whole concept of ADUs has come a long way.
It has.
What has been the driving force, do you think, that has changed this, that it's more receptive or more welcomed?
A shortage of housing.
Shortage of housing.
And the national numbers are somewhere around, I don't know, somewhere 5 million. There's a shortage of 5 million homes. That we need to keep pace with the growth of population. And there's just a shortage of housing. And that's why, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, but I believe that real estate will stay strong for next decade or so. I mean, I hear talk of bubbles and things like that. Affordability is the biggest issue right now. And I think the numbers like 68% of homeowners have mortgages. And of that 68%, I think the number was 60% of them have interest rates at 4% or less. And then 30% of those mortgages are at 3% or less. Mm. So homeowners are looking at their low interest rate that they have locked in for 30 years as an asset. And, you know, interest rates have doubled. And you have people that have those low interest rates that are saying, I'm not going to move. Why would I? And there lies the problem, because where are they going to go?
Right.
Yeah. So there's a pure shortage of housing. And that's good if you own.
So speaking of that, that's a great segue into the next question that I've gotten. And various people call me on this in terms of, you know, can I put an ADU on my property? So that's the question. Is every property eligible for an ADU?
Generally, yes. I've seen ADUs added to 12-unit buildings. I've seen them added to single families as well. The issue becomes there are certain factors that affect whether you can or can't. I've seen properties that have an easement, a utility easement. So there's a pole there, and for whatever reason, they won't allow it. Sometimes they will, sometimes they won't. It's really up to DWP.
So have you seen with that?
Question, I have seen properties that you cannot get an ADU on it, but most of the time you can get an ADU on your property. More of it where.
Do you mind sharing which property or what hindered that particular property from getting an ADU?
It was the utility easement.
Okay. So yeah. Utility easement. So the utility pole, and not cost effective for the city or the owner to go in and probably move it. It's just too much involved.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I've never seen a utility pole moved. I guess it happens, but sometimes it could be more expensive than what it's worth. Perhaps they'd make you put it underground, bury the wires underground. I don't know. But that was the reason that I saw that you could not get an approval on one. They do. It's kind of they used to do, and I still think that they do it kind of a point system. If you're so close to a bus stop, if you're within a quarter mile of a bus stop, that's points for it. So most of the time you can do an ADU onto your property.
Got it.
Yeah. I know it varies from municipality to municipality. For instance, the city and the county and the city of Inglewood. Inglewood, for a long time, did not allow ADUs in the city, and they had these restrictions that stopped you from doing it. For instance, they had a 16-foot high restriction for ADUs. So if you had a smaller lot and you wanted to put an ADU on top of the garage, you couldn't, because the garage itself is probably 8 or 9 feet, and then you put an 8 or 9 foot ADU on top of that, you're above the 16.
You're above the 16, yeah.
Yeah, but I believe Inglewood changed that. Inglewood was.
I have a colleague and a friend he put an ADU in his.
On top of the garage? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not on top of the garage, but he put an ADU in Inglewood.
Right.
Succeeded.
But for a long time, the city of Inglewood did not want them, and the state pretty much had to make them do it.
Right.
The approval process varies from city to city. And I had one in the county of Los Angeles. I think I told you about it. Took 9 months to get an approval for a garage conversion ADU. We weren't adding any square footage. It was converting a garage to an ADU, one bedroom, one bath, simple. It took 9 months. And I still hear that they're buried. That's in the county.
Wow. And something
other
like that.
Are taking less time.
Something like that can definitely affect. I call it carrying costs, because I'm going to transition into this next question that oftentimes I get called about, and this is a very popular one. How do you pay for an ADU?
Okay.
So how do you pay for an ADU? And I oftentimes am answering that depending on what are you trying to get done or what can be done. Can you walk us through, since you have done this, I mean, you've looked at the numbers both from a financing perspective, both from, from the construction, from converting or building ground up, what can an owner, and let's maybe talk square footage and maybe range, right? If we're just, like you said, in this example of a one bedroom, just something garage conversion, this is not ground up stuff that I've been seeing. Some people get really fancy too. I mean,
absolutely. You can make an ADU.
Fancy stuff.
Really nice. Yeah. ADUs. Yeah. Well, generally a garage in the city of Los Angeles, and that's what I'm talking about. Well, I can go outside of the city of Los Angeles. The houses that were built after World War II, postmodern types of houses in Southern California have a 20 by 20 garage, which is 400 square feet. So
400 square feet. Okay.
400 square feet, 20 by 20. That's your typical standard two-car garage. What was your question?
How do you pay for it? So just basically,
how do you pay for it?
Let's talk about the numbers. So before we discuss how to pay for it, in this example, based on what you're saying, 400 square feet, you're correct converting that garage. What can a property owner expect that would cost them? Because where I want to hint on is, I touched on it on the last episode, which is people are being preyed upon in terms of how to pay for this stuff. Like that's, I think real money is there, right? Like getting, you want an ADU? This is the newest thing. And people have no concept of what something like this could range. And so they're being stuck with these six-figure bills that you go, whoa.
You know, if you could do a basic one, and let me say this, with an ADU, you have to get plans approved. You have to go through the entitlement process. So you're going to have to do, most likely, you're going to have to do some work to the foundation. You know, there's going to be some framing because back then garages weren't framed as well as the houses were. If it's an older garage, there's probably water damaged or termite damaged wood. We have termites that are constantly eating. You're going to have plumbing, electrical. It's going to have its own address. And these are all things that add to the cost of doing an ADU. If you could keep the cost, you know, just a very basic, just a basic one, you keep it at $150 or so. I'm, you know, lumber and drywall goes up from time to time. The last one I did, that was about the cost of it for a 400 square foot garage. And you look at it as a one bedroom in most areas of Los Angeles will probably rent for around $1,900, $2,000 a month. $2,000 a month is a nice even number. So if you were to spend $150,000 on a...
Are you factoring in utilities in that? I'm going to check an ADU listing that I came across. And they were asking for $1,800, a really beautifully nicely done mm-hmm. ADU, 90047, not too far by the El Super. And
Manchester and Western, that area.
Manchester and Western, nicely done. In fact, I've learned that I'm related by marriage to the agents and the brokers and the owners that did that property. And so they were asking for 18. I think they were asking for 21 and they had to drop it to 18. So I'm going to go check back to see what they ended up getting for it. Because I think that's the big picture, right? That's the big question in all of this is how much you're paying for it and how much you think you can get for it.
Well, you mentioned utilities. I believe you can still separate the gas. Is gas meter is not a problem. You can put its own electric meter there. And I believe the city of Los Angeles DWP is allowing you to separate the water meters as well.
Got it.
So you could have it so where the tenant pays their own utilities. It's kind of up to you.
Yeah. So with that, so now I wanted to go back to, I'm kind of jumping around and I'm just conversing just as I would offline, because you know when we talk, my mind starts going. Uh-huh. So even with the separate meters, Tim, in terms of financing, they have issues. Like if you show there's a separate meter,
when you say you have to, when you're building the ADU, you're going to have to pay for that meter, the water meter, from DWP. You also have DWP come out and they do what's called a meter spot, and they will look at your property and tell you whether they want a dual gang meter. That's 2 meters in one. And they'll tell you where they want that meter to go.
Okay.
Does that answer that question?
So I get that part. Does that affect the financing of whether the lender looks at it as a two units to have the separate meters? That was my question. I wanted to be more clear.
It's still an accessory dwelling unit. It's still an ADU. It's not a second unit. Now you could add a second unit if the property is zoned for two units, but we're talking R1, residential one properties can have an accessory dwelling unit, not a second unit, although it functionally does the same thing. It provides housing, but they don't account for parking with an ADU.
Got it. So what you're telling me is that the industry,
they being the city, I'm sorry, I keep saying they, I like to identify who they is.
Got it. The city. I want to get back to the financing part because, you know, I'm wearing my broker hat right now on how to finance one of these purchases, because I've seen, I've seen and heard buyers get pushback from the lenders on the ADUs. Like there was one done, nicely done. I think they wanted 800 and something thousand. Buyers were on board and the lender said no, because it was not considered two units. And I'm sure that's what we're referring to here. So what it appears to be, what we're discussing, is that the finance, it's probably Federal Finance Housing Agency, has not caught up, right? The underwriting has not caught up with ADUs being, I mean, even though it functions as a second unit, that it's not being recognized as that second unit, thereby leaving
money on the table. I have not seen that. I have seen certain lenders that will not let you count that income from the ADU.
Wow.
But most of the time, it's a single family with an ADU. The square footage on public records for the ADU is added in with the property. You're going to pay school taxes, even if it's less than for 500 square feet or less on a room addition, you don't have to pay school taxes. But you do have to pay school taxes on an ADU, accessory dwelling unit, whether it's 300 square feet, 400 square feet, or 500 square feet. You're going to pay that school tax. I have not seen lenders that say, because it's not a second unit, we're not going to allow you to finance it. I've seen where they won't, you can get a higher loan amount if it's two units, but because it's a single family with an ADU, they still count it as a one unit.
Very interesting. Because let's say someone was qualified to buy two units, it increases their purchasing power because they can factor in the rental income.
Sure.
And see something on the market with an ADU. What you're saying to me, if I'm clear, that property likely won't qualify for that particular financing or that loan scenario.
You mean as a two unit?
As a two unit.
No, it will not. It will not.
Wow. I didn't know that. So I'm learning.
Right. I have not seen a lender deny a loan because it had an ADU. I've not seen that.
So I've ran into scenarios where and I'm gonna move away from my personal scenarios and making a show about me.
Was it a conforming loan or was it a conforming loan?
Yes, it was a conforming loan. Okay. Well,
because when you get into non-conforming loans, you know, that particular investor might not want to purchase a property that has an ADU on it for whatever reason. But most of your FHA, your Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae loans, I have found that they will allow the income from the ADU.
Okay, right. That's why I was a little confused, because I'm like, well, I've seen them go through, but you're saying that some won't allow the income from the ADU in that?
Some non-conforming lenders.
Okay, because that would definitely kill that. Poo-poo that whole thing.
Right.
You know, in order to, because it's on both sides, right? As an agent here, and we're listing the property, and go ADU, and then we go, all right, so we're going to bump it up to this price to make that work because they can get the rental income. But then Absolutely. Now I'm going to run into an issue in financing that particular purchase. So that's why I pay attention to those things, like where a property is located, what's the demographic, what are the loan products that you can expect someone's going to use. You know, all that is important when you're thinking about, the property.
Right.
Okay.
There are non-QM loans out there right now that owner-occupied, one could get into it for 10% down. And it doesn't matter what, they don't want to see your 1040s. All they want to look at are your bank statements. And if you give them 12 months worth of bank statements, the terms are one way, 24 months worth of bank statements, and it's another way.
I have a couple scenarios that I've just got called on today about people having cash yesterday and today. People mm-hmm. having cash, not on the right. books, no bank statements. I have to sidebar with you and call you. They've got the money, they want to purchase, but we run into those issues with, it's like, oh, but I don't have pay stubs. And I'm like, okay, do you have bank statements? Not on bank statements. Yeah, oh, mattress money, right? Like, how do you deal with that?
Right.
Let me...
We'll talk later on that.
We'll talk later about that. How do you pay for an ADU? So you, I just want to recap. So you can expect, was it 400 square foot conversion, about 150,000, right?
That's a very general number. I don't know the condition of this property.
Very general number. I'm not holding.
And we need a set of approved plans, really, to be talking numbers. But that's a general. That's a very general number.
Right. Okay. So based on that, just general number in this hypothetical.
In this market, as with lumber priced as it is right now, I'm putting a whole bunch of qualifiers in there.
Right.
I learned that from you.
And for that reason, you reminded me to throw the disclaimer. I normally throw a disclaimer up on the show, so I'll read it out loud. I'll read it out aloud for our listening audience to pause, right? The information provided on this show should not be considered legal and tax advice. Please seek legal and tax advice from those reputable licensed professionals. Although Mr. Timothy Campbell is a licensed contractor, he is not giving you a quote. He's not giving you an estimate. And the information he's sharing is not binding upon him, all right?
So, thanks so much.
Absolutely. So with that being said, so these hard numbers in terms of estimate, how do you finance something like that? What have you seen people do? Just kind of walk us through someone who wants to do an ADU conversion. They're doing it for various reasons, right? Age in place, allow the kids to come home, age, you know, and extended family scenarios. They want to create a retirement plan in the future for rental income. How do you finance something like this?
Okay, let's kind of work backward. You take $150,000 ADU.
Okay.
What's a good number that they would receive per month in rent?
A good number? I like the 1,800. The 1,800. I mean, you can push 2,000 depending where.
Right, right.
But let's say 1,800. One bedroom, 1,800 ADU.
You have a calculator. 1,800 divided, 150,000 divided by 1,800. What is that? I didn't bring my calculator with me.
That's okay. I've got my real estate calculator handy. See, people didn't know they were taking a real estate class today.
Yeah. Oh,
so it would take 150,000 is what you said?
Yes, ma'am. Divide that by 1,800.
1,800 is $83.33. Oh, no.
83 months. So you're talking 7 years it would take to pay for that at $1,800 per month.
Okay. Hold on. Why did that not do what I wanted it to do? 83, right. So 83 is what it came out.
That's the number of months that it would take.
Months. So divided by 12.
84 months, 7 years.
7 months, 6.94. Got it. So
7 years.
7 years for it to pay for itself.
Correct. So that said, you would probably want to do a cash out refi.
Okay. Explain what that is. So cash out refinance. What is that? Walk us through that.
That's where you refinance your property and you pull cash out. It's in the name. And there are two ways of doing it. Many ways of doing it, but the two most common ways, you can get a second trust deed if there's enough equity. If you are fortunate enough to have a 3 or 4% interest rate, you might want to get a second, because then the blended rate would be lower than, getting a brand new first trust deed at 7%. And so even
so you're saying, okay, let me just recap. So the first option is a second trust deed, and this would be by way of a refinance?
Correct. Anytime you refinance, do anything with the financing of your property, you're refinancing it. That's the technical definition of it. So if you're getting a HELOC, you're pulling cash out, you're getting a loan on the property, and it's secured with a note and deed of trust on that property, then it is a refinance.
You're
refinancing it.
I get asked all the time, because people who are owners, have equity, don't really understand the concept of how you get money out. It's not like an ATM, you slide your card and then money comes out of it. They want to understand, how do you actually get the money out of the house? And so for those who've never played Monopoly, where you turn the little card over that says you've mortgaged it after you bought it cash,
that's the
effect. That's what a refinance is you flip the card over that says you've mortgaged your property for this amount.
But would you agree with me in saying that if someone were to refinance their property and pull cash out to add an ADU, is healthy debt?
I would agree it's healthy debt, because I would be looking at how long, right? So just the way you did it, $150,000, if that's my cost, general hypothetical scenario for a garage conversion, divided by how much rent I can collect, $1,800. So that's a 7-year period. That's the same math we do when we're talking about, do we buy down the rate? You know, how long we expect to keep the property? Does it make sense on these, you know, the origination fees and all these other factors? So for me, long-term, right? Because ADU should be long game, mm-hmm. right?
I long would agree.
Long game, yes. I think it is healthy debt. That 7 years, oh my gosh, people are living in their properties for now 10 years is what I'm hearing.
Right, probably 10 years. They're now so after that 7 years, it's pure profit.
It's pure profit.
Right.
Wow.
And you take it further. If you took, let's say you got an interest only loan and you've got a calculator there, and this is just an easy way of the reason that I'm using interest only. Take $150,000.
Okay.
Times 0.07 and divide that by 12.
Okay.
What is that number?
$875.
Okay, so that's what the money at 7% on an interest-only loan would cost you. It'd be a little bit more when you add principal on there, you know, if you had a loan that was reducing the principal. And that doesn't include the increase in taxes or insurance, because your taxes are going to go up. Your property's going to be reassessed by the county, the tax collector. They mm-hmm. always want their portion of it. You're going to get a nice letter in the mail saying, hey, there's some plans submitted and you know, we want to know what you built and how much it's going to cost. But if you're charging $1,800 a month and the money's costing you $800 a month, I mean, that's a 2.5 to 1. So for every $1 you spend, you're getting what, $2.25 back or so? Is that
right? So you're not factoring in the
taxes or insurance.
Taxes and insurance.
Yeah, because the place has to be insured. Your insurance is going to go up and your taxes are going to increase.
Right. Say it again for the people in the back, because people forget this when they're being sold and told about whether they should, you know, let some other company rent their property, rent their parcel or rent their garage for 30 years and they can have it back. And they're going to be paid $5,000 per year. That's one of the offers that I've seen.
Right.
The company will pay you $5,000.
It's about $400 per month, $410.
$400 per month.
Yeah.
But they've got to factor in there's going to be an increase in your insurance and property tax because you've done a whole garage conversion. Not to add.
And that's basically what they're paying you for. After you pay for the taxes and insurance, you're not going to have a lot.
You're not going to have anything left, right? Mm-hmm. They've reaped all the benefits.
I would stay away from that. I mean, as a homeowner, if you hire professionals, you're going to pay more to hire a professional. You're going to pay more to have a contractor versus a licensed contractor that's bonded and that has an extensive resume. You're going to pay more, but it's worth it. It's like insurance. It's, you know, when you go someplace and get some guys that you don't know anything about that aren't licensed, they may do good work. I've seen some that do good work and I've seen others where they don't. And right. There's, you know, you can try to go after them if you could, but when you hire a licensed person, you have they're bonded and they have incentive to do your job and do it properly.
Right. CJ, Clarence Johnson just chimed in. I was expecting CJ to chime in too, because he's a proponent of ADUs and doing it right. And in fact, I think he did with a HELOC. In fact, mm-hmm. he was the person I was referring to who succeeded in Inglewood. And he just reminded me. So CJ, thank you for that. He says the midterm rental market is also a great choice for avoiding short-term rent rules while maximizing rents. He says we're getting $2,400 to $2,700 monthly for our one bedroom, 400 square foot garage, which we talked about, right? A garage conversion. So thank you, CJ, for reminding me of that. For that reason, Tim and I were also talking about, I have rooms for rent on a property. This is not a garage conversion, but just a single family where mm-hmm. we're renting out the rooms instead of the entire unit. And that's exactly the strategy we're going for, is to to go the midterm rental market to get more money and maximize those rents. So sure. Thank you for that.
But reminder. It is more work. It is more work. But if you've got the skills to do it, hey, there's extra money there.
Right. So can you maybe paint that? I mean, for those people who are not familiar with what work would be that would entail?
Basically an Airbnb kind of unit where you have mm-hmm. people that do short-term rentals. So you got someone that, and depending on where the property is, if you're close to the Coliseum, to the, you know, the SoFi Stadium that everybody's goo-goo gaga over, that, you know, it certainly helps. The closer you are to attractions here in Southern California, the more money you'll get.
Right. Yeah. And so the work you're referring to is just the maintenance, just the flipping it.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be furnished. Versus a regular ADU where the tenant provides their own refrigerator, stove, et cetera. A number I've heard is you want to keep it as nice as you can and you want to keep it under $1,000 per room. I mean, so if you're doing a short-term rental, you have to generally, you want to provide internet, you have to have dishes, you know, stove, refrigerator, appliances, towels, linen, you know, the list goes on and on, and you have to, you know, there's just some accounting that needs to be done, but yeah, I hope, does that answer it?
Yeah, that answers it. It provides a perspective because, you know, what I was thinking, again, that's why I was glad CJ was on and you're on to just share that perspective outside of what I was thinking, especially because what's recent for me, I'm getting inundated. I've probably had over 200 phone calls on housing, right? People looking for a place to rent and people are looking for a place to live, not to be there for 3 months, 6 months, a month. Like people are really without housing.
Sure.
And so when I say to them, you know, the room is $1,450 a month or whatever it is, they're like, I'm looking for a whole house or I'm looking for a 2-bedroom and the max I'm willing to pay is $2,000. And so
you're not going to be here in Los Angeles.
You're not going to be here in Los Angeles. That's the hard part, right? That is the hard part. The hard realities. There's a lot of reality setting in right now, and I'm not going to get into that because I, you know, doing property management, I take all kinds of phone calls and, you know, I got to weather through that. So great. So in terms of paying for it, we had option one. You mentioned about the second trust deed. Second option, would you, this is not financial advice, but I would imagine people are using their retirement income, retirement, you know, pension, a 401k to draw money to pay for something like this.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly an option. Most of the time, an ADU on most properties, once again, we're $1,800 a month. What is 18 times 12? Can you calculate that for me?
Yeah, say that again.
These are really raw numbers too. 1,800 times 12 is what?
So we're at 21,600.
Okay, and 21,600 divided by, we're once again at that number of 150,000. What is that? What is that as a percentage?
Divided by what?
By 150,000.
144. Oh, sorry. 21,666 divided by 150. Percent is 14.
Is that better than the stock market? 14% on your money? I mean, yeah. That's another way of looking at it. I'm not.
That is another way of looking at it. Right.
You know.
14% return.
So if you were to get a 14% return on your 401k. Or your retirement account, I don't know, is that good or not good? That would be up to that particular individual. But right. Borrowing the money against your property and paying 7% on a conforming loan, that's one of those individual questions as well. If you've got a 3% interest rate, your interest rate is going to double, right? I mean, you're going from more than double, you're going from 3% to 7%. So, whether you do it from a first trust deed, second trust deed, or a HELOC, you know, with the HELOC, you know, you can pay any of those loans down. I mean, some loans have prepayment penalties, But generally, they're for the, if you were to get one, it would be a prepayment penalty in the first 5 years. But you can still, they will still take your money. They will still allow you. You just would have to pay a penalty if you paid it down so far. Without getting too technical, right. It's kind of, it's up to the individual. You know, is 14% good? It might be good for one person, another, it's not. Some a younger person with a 401k that's not large enough, they may want to, but they have the equity in their property, they may want to do that. There are loans out there that will finance your home improvements, and they will do a feasibility study. And in that feasibility study, they will base the value of your property on what it's going to be and not what it is now. When you get that kind of loan, generally speaking, they're going to, which may be good for some borrowers, they do a draw method. It's done on a draw basis. So, they hold the money back in an escrow account and they distribute it as the work's being done. That's generally what I find with those.
Right. Let me remind those who are just joining us, we're on with Mr. Timothy Campbell, licensed contractor, loan officer, and real estate investor. Over 3 decades of experience, and we've worked together, and it's been a joy to learn so much. And so he's back on the show. I had him on the show 5 years ago, and it was timely to have this discussion again. So thanks for joining us, Tim. CJ had a comment here that I wanted to also highlight, because this is what you were talking about earlier. And so CJ shares that many cities are restricting STR uses of ADUs. I think this is what SB 9 and 10 that you're referring to.
Los Angeles is one of those cities.
One of those cities that's putting those restrictions. So he adds midterm is 30 day plus and targets traveling professionals and nurses who stay 90 to 100 day, 20 days on average. He's mentioning Furnished Finders as one of their best referral source.
Very good source.
So Furnished Finder, I think that, so are you signed up to pay? What is it, 90? I'm like hesitant on paying it, CJ. So, but because you're saying you're getting, you're pulling the leads from it, I think I'm going to go ahead and bite the bullet and pay for it. But I was kind of like, I don't want to pay for that. I don't want to pay right. for it.
And it's tough getting qualified with those companies. I mean, they want your social security number. They want to know a lot about you to make sure
Let me ask CJ a quick question about that, because I don't know if it was Furnished Finders or another site. Do they come and inspect the property? Because I read one, there was traveling nurse and they had to like score the cleanliness and like they're scoring it for that particular target market. Was Furnished Finders one of those where they're actually coming out to inspect the condition and rating your ADU or your unit? Let me know if that's one, because that's one question I want to know. Because I do have an occupant in this unit already, so I just want to make sure in terms of how that works. But I'll go back to Tim and I were talking about it, and I started to build my profile, and then it was like, okay, give me your credit card. And I was like,
Right, as you should be. You know, if someone's asking for your credit card, you should be very leery of that.
Okay, so he says one time a year fee, definitely worth it, no inspection. I don't remember giving them my social security number because the tenants pay direct. Okay. I feel good. I feel a whole lot better. See, this is why this is so much game on this show. So much gems. Press one, let me know you're here. Press two, make sure you share it. Somebody needs to hear this information today. Let's continue with the questions. How are you on time? Because I definitely have gone over my regular show time, but I do have a couple more questions. I just want to be mindful of your time, Tim.
Sure, we could do another 10, 15 minutes.
Perfect, 10 minutes and I'll wrap it up.
Okay, so and I'll come back. This isn't the last time.
Yeah, this other question here, I'll pop in here, is about these programs as it relates to, and you may or may not know, but I think as we're talking about how to fill these spaces, how to fill the vacancy of the ADU. So a homeowner who does an ADU, because I've been hearing this, is it true? Is it true that you have to use your ADU to fill vacancies for the homeless population or unhoused population and or seniors?
You're asking me that. That no, I've not heard that. You can rent it to whomever you like. Family member. It could be a family member.
So you're not limited to who you can rent it to. You're not obligated to rent it just to a particular demographic of people.
Not in the city of Los Angeles. Maybe there's some new ordinance in Santa Monica has some weird stuff.
Tim's like, I don't know what these cities are doing with all their new, yeah, all their new rules.
And all of them don't. Maybe they make sense in a meeting, but when you put it on paper and start talking to people and asking them questions, they don't make a lot of sense. To answer your question, I have not heard that before.
Got it. So
I have heard of hotels that have to report their vacancies every night. Okay. And they let homeless people live in those, and we're talking all hotels, not just.
All hotels. Wow.
All hotels. So some really nice hotels that have homeless people up and down the hallway, and that, you know, doesn't make a lot of sense. And there are people that won't go anywhere without their dogs. And, right. You know.
Wow. Okay. See,
got nothing against dogs, but there's a place for everything.
Right. So, and even that, we've got to be careful because there's a whole thing with emotional support animals, Tim.
Well, you know, we're talking, you know, if it's a seeing eye dog or a dog that helps someone that's handicapped, that's one thing. But
right,
everybody's dog is a seems as though they are.
And that's one of those things that that's one of the things that is a challenge, is because then people, you know, they're seeing that there's the door open for dogs who are for disability purposes or emotional support. And then everyone's like, oh, my dog is for emotional support. And it has that adverse effect where it's ruining it for those who really need those services. And those are things that landlords, homeowners, property managers, those are things we're up against, is we want to be compliant, but then there are those who are abusing kind of the opportunities presented to support those with disabilities or special needs. Okay, so I'm glad I presented this question because, again, misconception, but what I have found, and you're right, it depends on the city. LA actually has a program where if you participate, they do have a program. If you allow them to, if you use them, they will manage the entire experience of that client if they are unhoused or a senior. And so they come with a caseworker, case management person that will be your point of contact. So that
the VA has a program like that as well. And I've used the VA.
The VASH program, right?
Yeah. And the workers, when you call them, they come out, they actually come and deal with the tenants that have issues.
Right. So I want to go back to this because this comment here that CJ mentioned about this, these rules here, because this goes to what you were saying in terms of there's this entire movement about allowing ADUs to happen is because it's supposed to fill the need of vacancies and not necessarily fatten the pockets of property owners and investors. And so they've been attempting to counter this. What do you foresee how that would affect our market as real estate professionals with more limitations being imposed by the city as to what can be done with those ADUs? Because if we've been presenting it in the way or the light that CJ has said here that, oh, I'm going midterm, you know, I'm going to go that market, but this is an owner-occupied property subject to these rules, how do you expect that would affect our market in terms of the selling and buying of ADUs?
The selling and buying of properties with ADUs. Gosh, I don't know how to answer that. You're saying, so let me make sure I understand you correctly. You're asking, what do you think the restrictions that the city puts on homeowners and property owners that of properties that have ADUs, the restrictions?
Yes.
I think they ultimately hurt the housing stock. I mean, people don't like investors, and there are the public in the city council. It seems as though property owners have become demonized providers of housing. And most housing nationally, anyway, is provided by individuals, people like you and I, that just own a building and rent it out. Now, that number could change over time because there are real estate investment trusts. There are entire communities and areas where they're building it. They're building these communities just to rent them out. So, for instance, Chase has a community that they are building. I heard on the news where they are renting it out. They'll never sell any of the properties in there. So a person that lives in one of those properties will pay their rent. They'll bank with Chase. And I'm using Chase, just it could be any institution. They pay their rent to that institution. They pay their car payment to that institution. And they bank with that institution. That I don't particularly care for that. I think that I really do like individual homeowners. And I think that as you put restrictions on them, why would you do it if you're not going to make money? And that's why we're all tuned into this. We, you know, want a piece of the American pie.
Right.
And real estate is a great way to do it. So when you put restrictions on there, ultimately it hurts. When you add new restrictions to what you have to do to build an ADU, that hurts. It adds to the cost, and ultimately it adds, it goes up. Somebody's got to pay for it, and, you know, we'll pay for it in the form of, the public will pay for it in the form of rent, higher rent.
I just think it's interesting. I mean, and you hit it on the head. It's spot on.
I hope I answered your question.
I agree with everything that you shared. It does ultimately hurt the industry. And those who have the ability to create more housing stock, and it's just creating an adverse effect. I really enjoy this conversation. I know we can continue it, but those of you who are interested to learn more, I did share that. Let me just put it here. But Tim, how can people connect with you? How can they learn more? I mean, you're a licensed contractor. You've done ADUs. You've done projects small and large. We shared single family to multifamily. You're a loan officer, active in the business. Is it okay for me to share that I work with you for creative financing as well? I already did. how can people connect with you, Tim? Did I lose you? Oh, it looks like he froze. Hold on, let's see if I can bring him back. Tim? Right when he froze. Darn. Looks like he froze. But I'll plug him in here. So how can people connect with Tim Campbell? Let me send you a number here. You can check him out at lifemortgagefunding.com. Lifemortgagefunding.com. Tim's got a number here. I just want to make sure I give you the right number, because he's been using the 866 number. He said either phone number is fine to reach him at. And I also wanted to plug in, I've got this here. You can also reach him at 323-600-6966. For those of you who are tuning in on our radio podcast, that's 323-600-6966. Timothy Campbell, loan officer, NMLS number 246905. He's a licensed loan officer, also holds a DRE license as well. And he is someone who's knowledgeable, experienced, and will genuinely help you and guide you through that decision, as whether it's a loan, it's an ADU, whatever your financing needs are. He is definitely someone that you can connect with and lean on. We lost him, but it's okay. Tim, we've got you covered. We've got your information plugged in here for those. Oh, he popped on back. Okay.
Tim, I am so sorry.
It was almost like cute. I was like, Tim, how can they connect with you? And we didn't hear from you. And I plugged
back
it in.
Now.
But what's the phone number, best way for people to connect with you? I gave the lifemortgagefunding.com website. I provided the 323-600-6966 number. Any other way or means you'd like for people to reach out to you? When are you available? What are you available for? Tim?
Or you could call me toll free 866-796. Sure. 866-796-7253. Or feel free to T. Campbell at C2FinancialCorp.com. That's T. Campbell, C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L, like the soup, at C2FinancialCorp.com. Thank you, Lisa.
We've got you. Yeah, absolutely. We've got you plugged in here. Great. Thank you again for your time. This has been very informative. I've
Thanks
learned
for having
a
me.
Lot more than I did, than I knew an hour and 15 minutes ago.
So, very good. Very good.
Absolutely. It's all, you know, I'm relieved when I learn more. I am usually pleased and relieved when I know more, because with that knowledge bank, I can share with my tribe, my community. And you've always been available to me when I'm, you know, pick up the phone and I say, let me call Tim. What's Tim think, or what do you have to say about it? So I'm extending Tim Campbell, Timothy Campbell, to you all as well as a resource. So don't hesitate to reach out to him.
Please do.
All yes. right. With that being said, thank you. This has been another information-packed episode on Ready, Set, Real Estate. You know, we do not falter, you know, with bringing this valuable information. Again, information pack. I did go over time today, but thanks again for hanging with us. We'll see you next week again for another information-packed episode on your number one real estate podcast. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Ready, Set, Real Estate podcast with Lisa Gillette, the LA Super Agent. Please like, subscribe, and share LA Super Agent.